ready. It'll just go, say go, and then I'll wait a second, then I'll start.
Go.
Okay, so now we've done 9 holy offices and the 10th holy office. It says clue, C-L-U, and that means club. And I put this together in the late 80s when the fad of Generation Y, maybe? Yeah, Generation Y was having rave clubs and ecstasy clubs, right? What was the phrase for those clubs? Or rave clubs, right? Wasn't that your time?
Yes.
Yeah, and so the idea of having going to or naming things clubs or rave clubs, so I'm playing on that. So and that's the transient fashion of that period, late 80s. So what is Bob's rave club? Well, it's 4 clubs. In Toronto, it's Club 22. And if you look at the way it's laid out, what does clue or club, 10th Holy Office, enhance? Enhances 7, right?
Yes. Wait, no.
No, it enhances 22, sorry.
22.
Obsolescence 7, retrieves 18, and flips into 14 when overdone. So what I meant by that is that 22 was Toronto, because Toronto is 2-run-2. You know, you just say Toronto, it's like 2-2 with a run in front of it. So it's 22 on the run. So because I was in Toronto in the late 80s when I did this organization presentation, which was part of the radio show, that I was enhancing 22, so that's Club 22. And obsolescing 7, and that is the idea that the lucky number 7, which has been a meme, a charm, an idea, notion, a cliche for centuries, I guess. According to the Evergreens, number 7 and its charm power was diminishing, and we were moving into 8. 8 was the new lucky number. I don't know when that ends, when does 8 begin, I don't know what. So, taking the clue from the Evergreens, I said, yeah, we'll make 7 obsolete. And then 18 is the number for ISIS, and then 14 turns out to be New York City. Now, I laid out these numbers because I knew that 14 was going to be a top number in the 90s because first indicated in December 89 when this murderer at the University of Montreal in Quebec, he killed 14 women, 14 fellow engineers. So I thought, he didn't kill 22, he killed 14. And then it was announced around that time that the Queen's fortune, Queen Elizabeth of London, was $14 billion. And, you know, this is a memo to Prince Charles, and so 14, and as the royalties took over in the 90s as much as they could and tried to, that meant we were moving out of 22 into 14, as symbolized by the Queen's $14 billion. Now, when I did the chart a few years later, well, 5-7 years later, I did the chart in 95, I decided to put LaRouche in the obsolete position. So he's number 7 on the tiny note chart. McLuhan is 22. He's in Toronto. Also, his whole notion of metaphor and the Thomas Aquinas version of metaphor is A is the B, is C is the D, the doctrine of proportionality, analogical proportionality, so that's McLuhan's thing, so we make that 22. And Los Angeles was going to be number 18, but Zappa has a lot of 18 in him, but Zappa's not really an 18, because in my mind 18 is the cult of ISIS, so that's the new age world. So I put 18 in Tokyo and William Irwin Thompson quadrant on the chart. And then I ended up in New York. I was in New York when I was composing the chart. And New York is like 14 miles long, 14 square miles, can't remember, but it's approximately 14. So I said, oh, here I'm stuck in 14. And the Android meme was having its after image effect in the 90s, so Coker was pretty good on that, so I made Coker 14. And then I made myself 8, you know, moving into the new luck plane, which is 8. So going back to the way it's outlined on the Holy Office chart in the Memo to Prince Charles, you have 7 and 22 retrieves 18 and flips into 14. Now, these numbers, people look at 22 and they say, oh, okay, I'll look up 22 and see what 22 is. And they look it up numerologically. I mean the numbers are more in the level of shapes. When I did the chart, did the holy offices, so that 22 is nice and proportional. That's A is to B, C is to D. 1 and 8 is oneness, the New Age idea of universal unity. And they're trying to be 8. They're trying to be the new, but they don't get there, so it remains an erect 8, not a horizontal, a vertical 8, not a horizontal 8, because the horizontal 8 is the Möbius strip or infinity sign, eternity sign, which is for the Dobbs quadrant. So 1 and 8 is the old-fashioned New Agers trying to be the new. And so they are 18, 1 and an erect vertical 8. Now 14 represents the unity of the cloned ESP effective android beam. And then the 4. And the 4 is what was 22, but implodes into 4. And that's quadrophenia. So you got 1, which is your unified, inevitable post-Rai returning to essence situation. And then you have your voluntary ESP, where you pretend to be a little separateness and a little Rai, and you express yourself, and you do this digitally. So that's quadrophenia, and that's 4. Then the 8 on its side is the cold fusion zone of new frictionless society. So those were the meanings of the shapes. So it wasn't necessarily the number 8, but I did say that 7 was a lucky number, and that's numerological, and 8's new number. So there's the number dimensions in there, but I stress more the shape of the letters. And the shape of 7 is like a broken 8. It's a broken 4. Two ones trying to implode. It's an awkward shape.
Well, it's like an arrow pointing to something.
Yeah,
we've had this conversation before.
Beg your pardon?
So we've had this conversation before.
So 7 represents visual space, a broken, fragmented visual space, and it can't really become resonant. So it's pointed. It has a point of view. It's an arrow. It's goal-oriented.
Aesthetically speaking.
Beg your pardon?
Aesthetically speaking.
In terms of the shape of it, yes. Yeah. So you get two aspects. You got the content, numerical, numerological meaning, and you have the shape. So when you look at the holy office, the 10th holy office, that's Club 22, and that is the perspective or the motive of using all 9, which is what I did on my radio show. I play fragments from any one of the previous 9 holy offices. I play tapes of Garrett. I played a little Cosmic Awareness. That would be Dave Wurster, but I often played other occult stuff. But I won't go into that. It's not important. It was pretty rare. I would read the transcripts of sessions that Cosmic Awareness would do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. And there was Phineas Wake and Zappa. We played lots of Zappa and LaRouche and McLuhan and Herbert Armstrong and Mae Brussel, Dr. Beter. So all that stuff was all part of the Bob Dobbs Show with Mike Dyer, and fragments before that, not as widespread, just Mae Brussel, Sherman Skolnick, Beter, and LaRouche stuff was Bob Marshall's stuff on International Connection. But on Mike Dyer's show, as doing the Club 22 more than Bob Marshall, I could play the other stuff in more free range, because the Bob Marshall had to do it in a news format. With Mike Dyer, I could do anything. So, now, why are they as tetrads, which is quadrophenia? And so the four-part structure of the tetrad shows you that you don't stay in favor any one of them. You don't favor LaRouche, McLuhan, Herbert Armstrong, Zappa, or any of them. You jump around. But you are consciously quadrophenic because you can use one and know what you're obsolescing, what you're retrieving, and what you're flipping into. So I put the fragmentary nature of our multi-bodied selves into order, and that's called conscious quadrophenia. It's even called quadrophenia plus, because it's always more than the metaphor or more than the process, because you have to pay attention to the present, which is pretty immeasurable and unchartable. So if you look on the tiny note chart, you'll see quadrophenia plus. So in the Dobbs quadrant.
Right, I'm familiar.
Right, so the So really, the nine holy offices. Okay, it's called on the five bodied site. Monsquas put it up and titled it the Holy Office Chart from the chart section of five bodied. The Holy Office, in a way, is Club 22, because it really is the perspective of Club 22. It's not Zappa's perspective or LaRouche's perspective. I wouldn't even know what I was doing there with them. So it's Club 22 that had the Holy Offices, and it was said as a Holy Office with tongue-in-cheek. So did I explain that 14 is 1 and then the 4? Okay.
Yes.
In the Croker quadrant, the one is the unified post-Rye return to essence, the cloned ESP. There's only one thing, and nobody knows how to translate into anything else. We are allowed to pretend to translate or to volunteer to translate, and we project our own interests and opinions or realities or wars or baseball games, whatever we want to do, or form a band, or create a website. Those are all expressions of voluntary ESP, voluntary disconnection from the cloned ESP, which the digital Android meme allows us to do. So most of the 90s or 80s into the 90s is in the Croker quadrant, is 1 and 4. So the 1 represents Michael Dyer, the 4 is me doing Quadrophenia with him and the callers, you know, and I represent what through Bob Yoga, which means a disciplined study of how to do this. Doesn't mean doing yoga in particular, but you could bring in yoga if you were studying in the Cosmic Awareness Holy Office or the William Irwin Thompson. So the Bob Yoga is how to do and rehearse conscious Quadrophenia inside the Android meme, which is offering you voluntary ESP parallel para to clone DSP. So that's how it's organized. That's what the string of tetrads means. So, what would you say to all this?
Oh, you want my initial question or my new ones? My initial question was, what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point?
And you can go with that, and then we'll go to the next one.
Yeah, the point is, that we're in a time of pattern recognition.
Right.
We've had, McCoon called it, three Copernican revolutions. We had the original Copernicus revolution, you know, where he showed that, or it's a heliocentric world. The Earth isn't the center of the universe, the Sun is. And then the second, and that was, McLuhan would say, a product of the printing press. Printing press threw man to the edges of the universe. The visual space sort of created an extreme separation, emphasizing the eye and marginalization of the human form at the immensity of space that we're beginning to see with eye instruments like the telescope and all that. And that's the Galileo zone. So Copernicus theorized on that, and then the second Copernican revolution is Immanuel Kant, and he said that visual space doesn't have mastery over over our understanding, and he brought in the idea of an interval or a gap in our knowledge potentials. And McLuhan said, well, that was the beginning of going back in inner space. So Kant was anticipating the electric effect. He was in 1780s, 1790s, say, in that period. He was just before the electric age was going to burst on the scene. So he was theorizing the effect preceding cause of the electric effect, just like Copernicus, you know, theorized the effect of the telescope before the head telescope, I guess, or before Galileo was able to really prove a lot of stuff. That is, and then you have Kepler before Galileo, right? Just before Galileo. So in the transition from Copernicus to Galileo, you have the same effect here in when you have Kant. Because the electric age, he's preceding, intuiting the electric effect, though he doesn't see it that way. He's just conceptualizing it, but he sees the inadequacy of the Gutenberg visual space. So in the transition from, say, Kant to Edgar Allan Poe to Baudelaire, you have the movement into inner space. And then in the beginning of the 20th century, you have the third Copernican revolution, which is pattern recognition. This is what McLuhan calls it. And the prophets of the third Copernican revolution is the radical modernists like Wyndham Lewis. Yeats was a godfather to Lewis, James Joyce, Ezra Pound, T.S. Eliot. And then in science, you had Einstein's revolution, looking at the patterns, patterning figure-ground relationships called relativism. And then you had anthropology. But it was Joyce, Lewis, Pound, and Eliot who really started to see and apply pattern recognition, figure-ground awareness. They started to see how the modes of communication determined the concepts in arts and sciences that would be evoked. So McCune called that gestalt awareness or figure-ground awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So the 20th century is a time of pattern recognition, and it also was translated into business as the polls. The polls gave you the momentary transient patterns for organizing the economy or for determining what was selling and what wasn't. So that led to the discovery of the technique of the suspended judgment. The discovery in the 19th century was the discovery of the technique of how to make an invention. You realize what effect you wanted to make, what invention, so then you work backwards in that and found out the way to get to that effect. So that was the 19th century discovery, but the 20th century discovery in the world of software pattern recognition was the technique of suspended judgment where you looked for patterns that you could manipulate. That was a formula for power in all kinds of fields. And the average citizen is running around having a point of view, trying to invent stuff, and didn't know that we'd moved into a world of management by suspended judgment, and you could call that blatant paganism, maybe. Extreme paganism. Or cultural relativism. So what I offer is how to develop pattern recognition with McLuhan's tetrad as a almost scientific, in quotes, precise use of figure ground and gestalt awareness. And that is a necessary strategy for psychic survival in a world of information overload, which every generation since, the 30s was thrown into, maybe even the 20s, was thrown into a world of information overload in the 20th century. And they're always groping, every generation groping for icons of identity, postures of identity, and how to develop a cool stance, a stance of techniques of suspended judgment in pop culture as being cool. Comes in with Miles Davis and the Beatniks, right? And that's around the time of the satellite. So the satellite is going around the planet. It's got a detached view of the media on the planet and the nature's environments on the planet. They're into play with technological environments. That is, the astronaut has a real technique, position of suspended judgment. He's suspended in space. So, but you're actually suspended in electric space too when you're on the telephone or when you're on TV or engaged in electric media. So the point is develop ways of having pattern recognition. And so I present the best patternizers in their respective fields, you know, what I think is the best and will probably be proven to be best. I mean, they're not widespread known, these nine holy offices, but in the long run, they will be. They'll be the ones that our century will have known to have produced as, you know, quote, geniuses. So that's the point.
Okay.
Now, of course, that doesn't... nothing helps anybody nowadays, so it's an attempt to be useful.
Yep.
Be socially constructive, you know, offering dead holy offices. I did have to have an alibi for being on the radio show with Mike, right? I'd have ostensible socially redeeming principle, so I made up the holy office and pretended that this was a natural yoga for you to develop. And of course it is, but the real issue was that I was on the radio to energize the Android meme so that I could take over the Secret Council 10. And I could only do that by being in the TV body, the radio body, and the beginning of the chip body. Though that wasn't as widespread in the late 80s and 88 when I became head of Secret Council 10. So it was due to being on the radio. I used the electric effect there in an alchemical way to accomplish it and knock out Prince Charles and Prince Stern Taxis and Mr. Romanov of Asia. So there was my personal agenda doing it, and I had to have a cover story, right?
Yeah.
Now,
go ahead.
I would just end up this point by saying, if you look into any of those holy offices, it's worth your time. It's something you're not going to hear about in your normal community educational sources. institutional sources. They are unique sources of pattern recognition, and I think young people like to find a secret zone or a place that is natural in establishing their identity. They want to find some unique position, unique experience. Well, the 10 holy offices offer unique knowledge. Now, that would be the late 80s. It's a different situation now, isn't it? Because a lot, even in the 90s, what was interesting is, I mean, that memo is 1987. That's a 1987 memo. 7 years later, you've got Wired Magazine, 6 years later, you've got Wired Magazine retrieving McLuhan. You've got the Herbert W. Armstrong church collapsed, and so they're prompted by becoming absent. And then you have Zappa dying in 93, and his estate, his music being bought by Ryko Disc. Was it Ryko? Yeah, Ryko, for like, you know, $40 million or something. I mean, and then all of a sudden they dumped all of Zappa's CDs on the market, and he wasn't that prominent in the 80s. So there was a retrieval of Zappa. LaRouche was let out of jail in 94, and after being in there for 5 years, and he had a new renaissance for his movement, especially in the new Russia, because when he went to jail, the wall had not gone down. He went to jail in January 89, but when he came out, there was a whole crew of people over there in Russia that wanted LaRouche over. They'd been reading his stuff in the 70s and 80s, so they celebrated him. So LaRouche had a revival. Dr. Beter died, but Beter's memes came out in the X-Files, all right, and Cosmic Awareness memes came out in the show of the X-Files.
What, like the lone gunman we're talking about him, or something like that kind of a?
No, just remember you saw the X-Files, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they were about UFOs, about mind control, about zombies, science fiction stuff. Now, anybody who'd heard my show in the 80s, or even Bob Marshall stuff, when the X-Files came on, and I was in New York, and I wasn't even watching them, but I got calls from a lot of people saying, hey, Bob, all that stuff you talked about, it's a big TV show. So I went and saw the movie eventually, got the gist of it. But so I would say that Beter and Cosmic Awareness was retrieved by, expanded, popularized by the Android meme in the X-Files show. Now, what else we got here? Finnegan's Wake, all kinds of 50 groups of studying Finnegan's Wake broke out in the 90s. I was part of one in New York City, and nobody was looking at Finnegan's Wake in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Few scholars, but it became a popular fad to look into Finnegan's Wake. Even got, you know, Jerry Fialka, got him, inspired him to start a Finnegan's Wake group in Venice, California, and it really was interesting how Finnegan's Wake became quite a well-known phenomenon in the 90s. So we're looking at LaRouche, McLuhan, Herbert Armstrong, Zappa, now Mae Brussel. Mae Brussel died in 88, and then there was a whole battle over what to do with her estate, and that actually got written up in a couple of books. I forget that book, Jonathan Vanekin or something. Jonathan Vanekin wrote a book on a lot of the holy offices, LaRouche, Mae Brussel, Dave Emery, and this stuff. And that came out in the early 90s, and that popularized some of the stuff that we had featured on CKLN. And he wrote about the battles over what to do with the Mae Brussel estate. And then Mae Brussel estate eventually, after going through this woman, Victoria or Virginia McCullough, I think her name was, Virginia McCullough, there in California, finally took the estate, the 40 filing cabinets from Tom Davis. Tom Davis couldn't afford to keep it going anymore, and his health was suffering, so Virginia Mullet took it over, and now it's in the Santa Cruz University of Santa Cruz in their library. You can get pretty well every radio show she ever made, you know, on a DVD for $50. I mean, that is really preserving Mae Brussel.
Did you say Santa Cruz?
Yeah, University of Santa Cruz, or whatever they call it.
In California?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to live there.
Oh, when did you live there? That's a nice place.
Let's see. That would have been 92 or something like that. 93, around that time.
That would be right around the time Pynchon was leaving that area. I think Pynchon lived up in Capitola, lived near there, lived in the Santa Cruz area in the 80s, and he moved to New York City in the early 90s. But why were you there?
I was hanging out. I was a kid, so, you know, I just...
Well, you would have been 20?
Not that old, no. I was 18, something something like that.
And that's a big Grateful Dead scene.
Yes.
And it's like headquarters almost of the meme, right?
How I ended up there, actually.
Yeah, through the Grateful Dead world.
Yeah, and then I went to San Francisco after that. And, well, there's a whole story attached, but...
But you were... You weren't in college or in institutional function?
No, not there. I went on to school on the East Coast.
After?
Yes.
But this is where you roaming around being a hustler and all that?
Yeah.
Yeah. And just exploring the Paleolithic world.
Pretty much.
Neo-Paleolithic world. Did you read much of Terence McKenna back then?
A little bit. I didn't read too much more. I really got into him probably later,
right.
Much later.
But did you surf in Santa Cruz?
No.
No. Okay. All right. So, we have Finnegan's Wake. Got expanded, retrieved on Beater and Awareness. May Brussel.
Unless you want to count skateboarding, that's sort of surfing the road.
Oh, you did that. Were you into the what do they call those kids on Venice Beach? You know, the ones who discovered skateboarding.
You're talking about the whole Dogtown thing.
Yeah, yeah. Were you a Dogtowner? Into that mythology?
I wasn't into it. I met, what's his name? Tony Alpha.
Right.
A few times. He was in Silver Springs, and I used to go there and skate all the time. And so.
Were you pretty good?
Yeah. I guess so. You can always be better at something, so you're never really good, but I get that, yeah.
But you were following the sport.
Yeah. I mean, I entered contests and things like that and had sponsorships and...
You had sponsorship? I mean,
yeah.
When I was younger. You would enter.
Yes, and then, you know, get things from companies and, you know.
Right. Okay.
Get it up after a while.
Right, so Cosmo Awareness, Beater, Finney's Wake, and who have I left out? Now, Garrett Dean. Now, here's the interesting. Garrett Dean, he dies in 93. And because I wrote his obituary for the local Halifax, Nova Scotia newspaper, a CBC or Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the national, like NPR or PBS of the States, the national radio, government radio of Canada called CBC, their Atlantic provinces on the East Coast, the journalists noticed my obituary and wanted to know who was this guy. So I told her, and then she started looking into it, and she made a little audio documentary and played it around Christmas 93. Yeah, he died in Halloween, October 31st, November 1st. Not sure what. He was found a day or so later, dead in his home on 64 Queen Street. If you want to go there and look at the old shrine, 64 Queen Street in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. He died, you know, 1st November, and by Christmas 93, they were playing this documentary. I was part of it, and local people that were involved with Garrett's life. It was really good, and it was so popular that they played it every Christmas up till about 1999. Became a part of a Maritimer's, Nova Scotia's Christmas reality to hear the neat documentary about this great guy, you know. So there was even a retrieval of Garrett, or an expansion of Garrett. So we have an expansion of McLuhan. We have an expansion of Herbert Armstrong. We have an expansion of LaRouche, an expansion of Zappa, an expansion of Beater, expansion of Cosmo Awareness, expansion of Finney's Wake, expansion of Mae Brussel, and expansion of Garrett Dean. And did I leave any out?
Oh, no. Wouldn't most of this stuff be upgraded after time goes on? Those people carry on the work, you know what I mean? So maybe you might want to go and build another chart, maybe. I guess you would do that or add to it, or, you know what I mean? Wouldn't this stuff be upgradable as time goes on?
Well,
you don't want to stay in one spot. I mean, the Finnegan's Wake's still useful, obviously, and so is McLuhan, and LaRouche is still kicking it, so...
Yeah, they all have staying power. I'm saying they have staying power. They have so much staying power that nobody can do anything with them in particular. Can't apply them, you know... Zappa never did make it as president of the United States, right? LaRouche never made it as president of the United States.
He might have a chance, though. They're talking third party all over the place now, so.
Yeah, but they're not going to let LaRouche in. But the...
It would be cool, wouldn't it? Then you'd have something to really talk about.
Yeah, now the guy is... he's 80. He was born in 22, same year as me, so he's 80 in September. He'll be 84 years old. That'd be great, having this old guy. And he's pretty lively for an 84-year-old.
Yeah, he'd probably do a good job, though, I think.
I don't know. Well, we don't want to specialize in any guys. I'm the actual president of the United States. My influence stands for me. Well, we would use all 10 holy offices. You know what I mean? We can encourage pattern recognition. That's the way to be a president, not to have one monistic agenda. Okay, so...
That's good to know. Let's end it there because we're done.